city clerk to please take the roll call.
Mark Brown?
Here.
Rob Dantino?
Here.
Marty Flanagan?
Here.
Sam Hill?
Here.
Craig Maladra?
Here.
Richard Marks?
Here.
Ray Pollack?
Still here.
Robert Piper?
Here.
Ron Singer?
Here.
Don Vogelsberg?
We begin each council meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance, and I'm going to ask a special young man who joined us tonight, a sophomore at Geneva High School, who's here this evening to try to decipher what it is we do and to help earn his citizenship badge. So, sir, please lead us in the pledge.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Item three, special items and presentations. We have quite the group with us tonight. Exciting. We have a very special guest, the new executive director of the Anderson Animal Shelter. Sandy Shelby is with us tonight. Sandy, as I just discovered, I think I actually knew this, though, grew up here in the Fox Valley.
I did.
You're a St. Charles Saint.
I am.
Is that right?
That's right.
And then pursued her career in animal welfare all over the country, just returned from California. Nice timing, by the way, to come back
to
this.
I know, wasn't it, though?
And she was brought on board as the new executive director of the Anderson Animal Shelter on November 1.
November 1st.
Wow.
So, yes.
Welcome. We have a proclamation that Sandy has asked that we read, and then after reading the proclamation, we'll entertain a motion in a second. We'll approve that proclamation. Then I'd like to turn the floor over to Alderman Hill. Fair enough?
Thank you very much.
And obviously, if you'd like to say something as well, that'd be fine, and I can present you the proclamation.
I would just like to thank the City Council and you, Mayor Burns, for hopefully approving this evening. This is something that I think, as we come together as a community to address pet overpopulation, it's certainly a way that we can be more effective by working together. I'm happy to say that we submitted the proclamation to Elgin, South Elgin, Geneva, and St. Charles, and all four have gone forward with it, so we're glad about that. And we also wrote letters to 72 veterinarians, members of the Illinois State Veterinary Medical Association, to ask them to lower their spay and neuter fees for the entire month of February. We're getting a really nice response back, some giving as much as up to 30% off of their spay and neuter fees for the whole month, which will help people be able to spay and neuter their pets and in turn save lives and reduce suffering. So we greatly appreciate your participation in this.
Without objection, I'd like to read the proclamation that I will later present to Ms. Shelby. A proclamation, and your agenda includes this, it is a proclamation, quote, Prevent a Litter Month, February 2010. Whereas pets provide companionship to more than 71 million households in the United States, and whereas humane societies and animal shelters have to put down more than 4 million cats, dogs, and rabbits each year, many of whom are healthy and adoptable due to a lack of critical resources and public awareness, and whereas this tragic overpopulation of pets costs citizens and taxpayers of this country millions of dollars annually through animal service programs aimed at coping with the millions of homeless animals, and whereas spaying and neutering has been shown to dramatically reduce the overpopulation of pets and feral cats, proving to be a wise investment in saving animal lives and taxpayer dollars, and whereas veterinarians, national and local animal protection organizations, and private citizens have worked together to ensure the spaying and neutering of hundreds of thousands of pets and feral cats through monthly Prevent a Litter campaigns and one day events such as Spay Day USA, and whereas veterinarians, national and local animal protection organizations, and private citizens have joined together again to advocate the spaying and neutering of pets and feral cats during the month of February 2010. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the City of Geneva that the month of February 2010 is so designated as Prevent a Litter Month. The Honorable Mayor Kevin Burns is authorized and requested to issue this proclamation calling upon the people of the City of Geneva to observe this day by having their own cats, dogs, and rabbits spayed or neutered, or by sponsoring the spaying and neutering of another person's pet. I hereby proclaim, and I would entertain a motion to so approve.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Pollack, seconded by Flanagan. Questions or comments for Ms. Shelby? Any questions or comments from the cats? Alderman Singer.
Yes, I think it's admirable that veterinarians in the community are going along with your program, and you said they're hopefully we reduce the cost by a 30% margin. What is the normal cost of spaying an animal?
You know, it really varies from veterinarian to veterinarian. It can be many times, especially with a canine, they charge by weight. So for a small dog, it can be anywhere from starting at $90 up to $200 or $300, depending on how large the dog is. Cats can range anywhere from $80 to $140. It just depends which veterinary clinic you go to. At Anderson Animal Shelter, we also do spay and neuter at low cost, and we participate in a program called NAWS, where we set appointments for low-cost spay and neuter and send them to an organization that does spaying and neutering for much, much less.
Well, that's admirable. Are you a private or public institution?
We're a private shelter. We do have contracts with East Dundee, South Elgin, and Carpentersville to take in stray animals, primarily canines. And sadly, there's not enough help in this community, as far as I'm concerned, about us being able to reach out to help the feline community. So it's nice to see the girls here with the cats tonight, because we strongly believe that there's a lot we could do to make things better for cats.
Thank you for your considerations.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You're welcome. Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I am a proud owner of two cats that were adopted from the Anderson Animal Shelter.
Good.
And they have been spayed and all kinds of things. But I just wanted to commend you. And there's a lot of homeless animals out there, and I wish people would, if they have the urge to get an animal, is to go out to see your facility first.
To ours or basically any shelter. I think it's important that people support our local shelters. King County Animal Control also has a shelter that I think we all need to support as well. I think when you rescue a pet, you're really saying a lot about your support of the community and the pets that we share it with.
And I have a very good neighbor who has neutered several animals.
I love people like that.
So I want to commend them here, too.
Thank you.
Anyone else for questions or comments from Ms. Shelby? We have a motion and a second. All in favor of the proclamation, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Great. Ms. Shelby?
No.
These cats look nervous after that proclamation.
Thank you very much. We greatly appreciate
that. Thanks for being here. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
Surprise. Interestingly enough, I read something in today's, I think it was the Chicago Tribune, that the pet industry is a $43 billion a year industry. It's one of the few industries that's still growing in the recession. Isn't that wild? Next year is expected to be $45 billion. It's sad, isn't it, when sometimes people buy their pets and they think it's a neat little gift and they forget that it takes work?
Well, they're companions, and people should always remember that and make a serious commitment when they do adopt. And that's why I feel that cats are companion animals too, versus free roaming. And so I'm hoping that we can all come together again to work on issues to help our kitties in this community.
You can count on us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
I'd like to turn the floor over to Alderman Hill. Alderman Hill has some very special guests in the audience whose faces should look familiar to all of us. I'm going to let Alderman introduce them.
We'll be up to see you.
What a great night. I thought I was only going to have one surprise tonight when I saw the proclamation. And now the introduction of Ms. Shelby was a second surprise because we're working hand in hand with her organization. For the last 4 or 5 months, I've been very blessed to have an opportunity to work with about a half a dozen lovely and dedicated ladies who are interested in taking taking care of feral cats and getting them spayed or neutered, whatever the case may be, and then returning them to the neighborhood where they had been originally living. This is an opportunity for the cat to stay in that neighborhood, and the problem would be if the cat was not returned to that neighborhood, another feral cat could move in. So that is the one of the techniques that is used in a program called TNR, Trap, Neuter, and Return. Two of the ladies of our group are here tonight. Cindy Leidig with her two of her cats. Is it Aaron and...
Arwen and Sid.
Arwen and Sid. And Mary Sinicor, another one of our ladies in our group, who actually owns one of our retail outlets. It's a girl's thing. So with all the time that she spends working, she still has some time to participate. We have other ladies who live, a couple of them in Geneva, one in DeKalb, one or two in St. Charles. We will be back to the council at some point to help reinforce the Anderson Animal Clinic program. And we do hope that we'll be able to work closely with Kane County Animal Control so that they can participate. And there are a lot of opportunities in this program, and I think it's a real good one. And thank you for giving me a few minutes, Mr. Mayor.
You're welcome, Mr. Hill. And nobody should be how do I phrase this? Cindy Leidig is a familiar face because she's also a member of the Plan Commission. So, ladies, would you like to say something? Would you like to introduce Arwen and...
Cindy.
Yeah, good Lord.
Okay.
If you'd like to let them loose on the council chambers, go ahead. That'd be awesome. Come out to the microphone, Cindy. You know how this, works, don't you? You know how to intimidate people who come before the...
Sid walks. Good.
He does this well. Arwen's a baby. She's, we don't know about her yet, but Sid, he does lots of work for me. He goes and he shows that you can have cats on a leash, which a lot of people don't believe. But since we have the leash law in Geneva, it would be a good idea to have your cats on a leash, and they can do it. You can put a little harness on them, and that sometimes works better. She's just learning, but he is quite the cat. He goes to adopt-a-thons with me, and he goes to a lot of stuff at the animal shelter, and so he does a lot of work. She's learning slowly, but I adopted him about 14 years ago. He was on Randall Road fighting trucks. I thought he was going to be a little kitten, but he kept growing.
That's a big cat.
He grew a lot. And then this one, she was a Help reject because Help thought that she was not going to survive. And Mary Sinicor fostered her and saw that there was a way she had to save her. So she did, and I couldn't say no to her.
Wow.
So that's their stories. But it's very important that we do the TNR stuff because there's such a huge overpopulation problem in Geneva. And it's not just a Geneva problem. It's a whole Kane County issue, and there's just too many cats. And it is less expensive to fix them than it is to humanely put them down or whatever may happen to them. Who knows? And one female cat can end up reproducing and being... There could be 144,000 cats related to the one cat, assuming that she has babies before her first year. So it's really incredible how they do that. It's shocking, actually. And there's not
since
enough.
An HBO show coming out or something. The Octomom Nothing. I'm sure I'll get letters about that as well. So what the
funny jokes.
So yeah, there is, but there's too many of them. And the shelter's overwhelmed, Kane County Animal Control's overwhelmed, Help's overwhelmed, cats are overwhelmed, every single place is feral fixers are overwhelmed. There are people who are driving to Moz, which is in Okina. to get these cats fixed. There are people driving in Chicago to Paws is another place where you can get inexpensive spaying and neutering done. But you got to take like a whole day to drive down there, and then you come back home, and then you go back down there later and pick them up afterwards, assuming that they've survived the surgery and everything. But it just seems ridiculous to me that we have to go to Mokena or Chicago to have these cats fixed. And I'm just trying to figure out why we can't do that here in our wonderful facility of Lake King County Animal Control. Or figure out a way we can come together and fix it. So.
She hits the microphone like some of our citizens do, depending on the issue we're discussing. So awesome.
Yeah, she does. And thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
For your time.
Mrs. Sinicor, do you want to add anything? Or?
Sid? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now, come on. Mary Sinicor is not nervous about being behind the microphone.
No, I'm not.
Basically, my whole thing with the feral cats wandering around is a lot of citizens in all the towns around here do let their cats out, whether they're fixed or they're not fixed. And so when these feral cats are being picked up, if owned cats are chipped, they'll never make it back to their owners. So I think, I know Geneva has a leash law and we're not really supposed to let our animals wander, but I don't think it's enforced. So I don't know if there's something we can do about that. I work with an organization that's in the area here, and we have since March taken in over 100 cats that were owner give-ups, foreclosures, cats left in homes, cats left outside, feet frozen to the ground. And we go to high-kill shelters, take mothers out of there that they let the mothers have the babies, and then they euthanize them all. So they let them go through the labor, deliver the kittens, and then they euthanize them all. And we go to these places and we take these mothers and these kittens out, get them back to health that's caught, and basically the money that we do this with has just come from our own pockets. We have like 5 volunteers in our organization. So just to stop the overpopulation and the suffering, because we lose so many kittens. They can't make it. You know, they're out in the cold and they get thrown in these high kill shelters. No one cares for them, and then by the time we get them, it's just a struggle to keep them alive. And we've had a lot of successes, we really have. So there's a great need out there to do something. I'm not sure we have all the answers, but
sure.
If more people are aware that this is a real problem, and cats are wonderful companions, they really are. I have a few myself, so thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Alderman Hill, anything else?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. If anybody is interested in helping our organization or being involved in picking up these feral cats, you can go to our city webpage and get my email address and office phone number and give me a call. Leave your phone number and name and I'll call you back. And we'll get you trained, and we'll have more volunteers helping us taking care of the feral cats. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from the council for either Cindy or Mary? Thank you, ladies, very much.
Thank you.
Item 4, amendments to the agenda. Are there any amendments tonight? Alderman Marks.
I would like to remove 11E from the omnibus agenda, please.
Very well. Item 5 is the omnibus agenda. All items marked with an asterisk are considered to be routine and can be enacted by one motion.
So moved.
Motion by Flanagan, seconded by Singer. Questions or comments regarding the omnibus agenda as amended? Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ray Pollack?
Aye.
Herbert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Ralph Dantino?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Craig Maladra?
Aye.
Gentlemen, you're free to leave if you'd like. Of course, we'll talk about you when you're gone, but...
Congratulations.
Good luck, guys.
Well, that's okay.
We'll see you all there.
Okay, you got it, man. That's good. Item number 10, municipal bills for payment. Mr. Clerk, please read the bills to be paid.
Bills for payment total $779,726.48.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve and pay the bills as read and as displayed on the city website.
Second.
Alderman Brown makes the motion to pay the bills as read and displayed on the city's website. That motion is seconded by Alderman Marks. Questions or comments? Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Roy Pollack.
Aye.
Robert Piper.
Aye.
Rod Singer.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Ralph Dantino.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Rick Malandra.
Aye.
Item 11A, consider resolution number 2010-02, authorizing execution of engineering design services agreement with McDonough Associates Incorporated in the amount of $26,900.
Move approval.
Second.
Hill makes the motion, seconded by Mr. Piper. This matter was discussed last week. Information was presented by Mr. Dinges at that meeting, and then subsequent information was forwarded via email by Mr. Dinges. Any questions or comments for the director? Alderman Pollack.
Thanks. Dan, you don't have to stand up here. I just want to say thank you for affording the statute that outlines what you had told us. I really appreciate it.
Anyone else? Questions or comments for Dan? We have a motion. We have a second. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ray Pollack.
Aye.
Robert Piper.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Ralph Dantino.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Craig Malandra.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Correction, motion passes 9-1 absent. Well, still, yeah, I know. See, this is why I don't like the people sitting up here with me. The look on McKittrick's face was, hey, idiot, it's still unanimous. Edit that part out. Mary's back to feeling better. Mm-hmm. Item 11B, consider ordinance number 2010-03, amending Title 4, Chapter 2 of the Liquor Code, adding the Class B3 license to the city code for the Dam Bar and Grill. This was contingent, of course, on the special COW meeting earlier. That was unanimous. I assume it will be as well. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Marks, seconded by Piper. Questions or comments?
Now you've let the gentleman leave. Should we jump on them?
Yes, yeah, absolutely, man. We'll never know.
We wish them the best at their new bar and grill.
Indeed. Thank you. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ray Pollack.
Aye.
Robert Piper.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Ralph Dantino.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Craig Malandra.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Item 11C. Consider resolution number 2010-07, accepting proposal and authorizing execution of lease agreement with Gordon Flush Incorporated for citywide copier equipment replacement.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Alderman Brown, seconded by Alderman Marks. Earlier we heard from Mr. Collins. He's now back in the penalty box. Any questions or comments? Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ray Pollack.
Aye.
Robert Piper.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Ralph Dantino.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Craig Malandra.
Aye.
We jump to item 11E as an Edward, authorized plan commission public hearing on zoning text amendments allowing single-family dwellings to be constructed, altered, expanded, or enlarged on non-conforming residential lots of record in the city of Geneva. I will turn the floor over to Alderman Marks, who asked that this item be removed from the omnibus agenda for his comments, and then I will entertain a motion in a second.
Mr. Mayor, my only real question is I've had a number of calls this week also, and maybe other aldermen have also, questioning if an owner's property was actually involved in this. And my real question here is how have we come to a conclusion of how this really has to be told to the public, and do we have to send out letters? Because that is a question I have. Am I going to get a letter if my property's involved in this? And I'm not sure if we really decided last week how everyone was going to be notified, or if we were just going to do it by the newspaper, and if that meets with the city council, you know, the city attorney's approval that that is a good route to go with this. That was my question and concern. I'm not sure who wants to answer that. But.
Well, I'll chime in briefly. I know that the city attorney had corresponded with myself and Alderman Marks regarding this very matter. I think it's important that the city attorney share with all of us his conclusion and perhaps recommendation. And Mr. Unsh, if you'd like to also perhaps add to that as well, I do agree with Alderman Marks that there's probably more curiosity.
There is.
The good news is that the text amendment is really... It's a net neutral effect, if you will.
So but I don't think people realize that, because when we discussed this last week, and I think that's where the confusion was, all we were doing was passing it on to the planning commission, and that's what I think is causing some of the questions.
And tonight is simply the issue of notification and to make certain that we're doing all we can so that folks are notified. So I'll defer to the city attorney, then if Director Unsh wants to comment as well.
Right, and if Dick Unsh wants to chime in, please feel free, Dick. This text amendment is an amendment to the regulations of the zoning ordinance that is restoring certain regulations that were taken away in 1995 when the city did a comprehensive zoning amendment. A comprehensive zoning amendment is a term of art in Illinois because it means that it's affecting the entire community. It's not just a per property revision. So back in 95, during that comprehensive zoning change, which was published by publication, not by individual notices, there were certain changes in certain residential districts affecting setback lines and so forth. Since that time, I know Dick Unsh's staff, his department, has had several concerns raised by property owners that have been affected by that. So for the last year or so, he's been working on a way to mitigate those changes. And that is the result of this amendment to the text. It's not a rezoning of individual properties, but changes the bulk regulations that affect various properties in the residential district that were impacted back in 1995. It's sort of a restoration, if you will, of those regulations at this time. Somewhat ironically, on December 17th of 2009, the Illinois Supreme Court issued a ruling that affected the city of Zion that had a similar comprehensive zoning regulation in 1996. And that case, to make a very short statement, affected certain properties that the court felt should have had actual notice. So the court was critical of not having actual notice to property owners during their comprehensive zoning change. So I think that this amendment is appropriately done by publication as opposed to mailed notice, because it is a restoration of the rights of those, restoration of those setback regulations that were affected back in 1995. And the Supreme Court didn't intend, it specifically says that it did not intend to do away with notice by publication, and I think this is one of those cases where it's applicable.
Director Unsh, I'm certain, will add some comments as well, but it should be noted that in addition to publication, we also, of course, use our social media outlets as well, whether it be the eGeneva News and what have you.
So I think what the concern is when we were talking about this, one, we just moved it to Plan Commission, and two, everybody's wondering, is my property involved?
Sure.
And, luckily, it's not like we're restricting more property rights. We're loosening them up a little bit, or going back, actually, to what we were at, but I don't think people understand that right away, just because we had to contain the conversation last week to just moving this to the Plan Commission.
Understood. Director?
Well, and I should mention, Mr. Mayor, that one of the concerns that certain property owners had was if their property were destroyed by some calamity, fire, what have you, would they be able to rebuild their house on that lot. And the zoning regulations that were that changed in 1995 would have made it non-conforming and would have been difficult to have that rebuilding. So we're really addressing that issue that was raised by several property owners, and the change that is before you would permit that.
Yeah, that taking the words right out of my mouth, Chuck. Yeah, what we're doing is we're really going back to a way of treating non-conforming lots in terms of either lot area requirements or lot width requirements, and we're saying those lots of record that existed prior to 1995 are buildable lots as long as they meet the bulk regulations, the setbacks, the coverage, the height, all the various requirements in their the particular zoning district that they're located in. That's what the proposed text amendment calls out. What we uncovered, we first started working with the North First Street neighborhood residents. There are 24 properties that are involved there, and we were discussing this because there were several property owners in that area that said, geez, I'd like to tear down my old house that's falling down. I'd like to rebuild a new house. We'd say, well, that's a nice thought, but under our zoning regulations, you can't do it because your lot's non-conforming in terms of either lot area or lot width. That had raised some real concerns on the part of those property owners, obviously. What we uncovered, Dave DeGroote, our city planner, worked with our GIS staff. We did a scan of the entire community, and we actually found beyond that North First Street neighborhood area a total of some 370 properties that didn't meet that dual standard in terms of the minimum lot width or minimum lot area requirements of the district that they're located in. And we just looked at it from a staff perspective and said, you know, is this reasonable? Is this an intent that the city council really believes, supports? Certainly non-conforming lots to zoning regulations can serve a very important function, particularly in a redevelopment mode where you're working to redevelop a given area. And so you can prescriptively establish zoning districts and zoning regulations that phase out the existing development to create something new. What we found is we had nonconformities not only in the older parts of the community and established neighborhoods that we're actually working to preserve from the standpoint of other programs and activities of the city. We also had situations in relatively new subdivisions where there was nonconformity. So this seemed like a reasonable approach to take. So without getting too much into it here, that's really what's going on. We're going back to those pre-1995 standards. And my final comment would be is that we would be perfectly willing to beyond the public hearing notice that would be published in the newspaper. We have Geneva Mail, and we can issue a separate press release to further amplify the nature of this change and the fact that we're actually restoring property rights.
I'm just happy we don't have to certify every letter out there for that. But I mean, I just want to make sure, because there are questions out there. I mean, I don't think people realize there's over 7,000 residents either in the city, and they hear 375, and everybody wants to know, is it mine? You know, one of them, because some of them don't realize
right.
They have an non-conforming lot.
Sure.
Mayor McKittrick suggested the alderman actually deliver the letters to the affected properties, and I thought that was just silly.
Maybe a more reasonable suggestion is if people have a question, they phone City Hall. I'm sure we can answer their question.
That's what I was trying to stop by exploring this
Apparently, Mary's fever hasn't broke yet. She's still under the delusion.
Mr. Unch, I'm sure you're willing to answer people's questions. Right?
I'm willing to answer any phone call that comes our way. If it requires setting up a call center, I don't know if we can do that, but
it's economic development, right, Ellen?
It's the lowest bidder.
Alderman Marks, anything else?
No, that is all I wanted to ask.
Would you like to entertain a motion to approve this item 11?
Okay.
Yeah, I'll so move.
11E.
11E. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Alderman Hill. Any additional questions, comments, thoughts?
Then turn out.
Mm-hmm. voice vote be sufficient?
Yes, voice vote would be.
Voice? Just directed. Okay. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
And anecdotally, Mr. Mayor, this will be before the Plan Commission.
I'm sorry. This will be before the Plan Commission at a public hearing, so
right.
It would be an opportunity for anyone interested in this matter to be heard at that time.
Are we still looking at February 25th?
Yes, February 25th is the scheduled date.
Thank you.
5 weeks away. According to my notes, we're down to item 12A, which is review of recent amendments to the Illinois Freedom of Information Act law. All of you know, or should know, that over the course of the last few weeks, City Attorney Radovich has been presenting information to key department leaders throughout the city regarding the new law, its impact on municipalities, its impact on departments. He has fielded questions and comments from these leaders, and we think it's only appropriate that we also benefit from his presentation. This is, I think, fascinating stuff. We're going to be broadcasting this tonight. So before I turn the floor over to Mr. Radovich, I want to ask our soon-to-be Eagle Scout, do you have any questions on what you witnessed tonight? Nothing. Pretty miserable, isn't it? Are you just really tired? And think how we feel, for God's sake. We got to be here.
Can I go?
Yeah, can I? See you guys. Thanks for being here.
It's been nap time now.
City Attorney Radovich, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to make just a brief presentation to the council, just give you an overview on the changes to the Illinois Freedom of Information Act that went into effect on January 1st of this year. As you may have read, this was an act that was the result of concerted efforts on the part of the Illinois Attorney General and the Illinois Press Association, and made several substantive changes to the law, which our staff, I will tell you today, I think I had three separate inquiries on this, so from staff members with regard to requests that have come in, and I know this is throughout the state of Illinois, these kinds of inquiries are occurring. So the slide presentation that I'm showing you is actually the slide presentation from the Illinois Attorney General's office. Mike Luke, who's senior attorney, assistant attorney general, has allowed me to use these. And so I thought you might be interested in some of them, at least as to the major changes in the law. Oops, sorry about that. Surprisingly, one of the major changes was to record that a presumption that all records in the custody of the public body, and a public body, by the way, is not just the city of Geneva. It could be any of the subsidiary bodies, such as the Board of Fire and Police Commissioners, the Pension Fund, the Mental Health Board. And Illinois has the most public bodies, I believe, of any state in the Union. I'm told that the amendments that were made by the legislature were really patterned after the state of Texas, which has substantially fewer public bodies than Illinois. So, but this is a presumption. So you're starting with the fact that all public records are open to inspection and or copying. And it's not just the typical paper copies anymore. You'll see that there's a recognition about electronic copies. So anything that's in an email form or other electronic format is open for inspection. There's an interesting change also in the fact that they've changed the law
to require a public body to produce documents that may be in some third party's hand. There may be a contractor, for example, who has been hired by a municipality to do work, and that contractor could be in another state. If the documents relating to that contractor are located in that other state, the municipality would have an obligation under the Freedom of Information Act to produce those documents upon request. So it's not only those that are on site, but they could be off site. That's a new change. Again, I told you about the electronic changes. There's been a redefining of what is exempt under the Freedom of Information Act. What I'm showing you here are the what we call the identifiers, but they're really the per se exemptions. Those things that should be excluded from disclosure when there's a request. And they involve all those enumerated items, obviously things like Social Security numbers, driver's license numbers, medical records. Those were all excluded in the past under the old law. But now they've recognized certain things such as private email addresses. As you know, the city's made an effort to notify its residents and customers that starting January 1st, unless we knew otherwise, an email address would not necessarily be considered a private email address and therefore might be subject to disclosure. As I said, they redefined what items are exempt. The former per se exclusions, what was thought to be private information, has now been redefined. In order to have personal information exempted, it has to be an unwarranted invasion of personal privacy. That is the disclosure of information that is highly personal or objectionable to a reasonable person and in which the subject's right of privacy outweighs any legitimate public interest in obtaining the information. This language, this exact language, has not been tested by the courts yet, so we're waiting to see who that reasonable person is. But generally, it would be things that would shock the conscience if you had to disclose them. So there's a subjective nature here. Another interesting change is that if a public body like the city were to exclude information from a request based upon this exception, we must first notify the Illinois Attorney General. They have created an office called the Public Access Counselor's Office. And that Public Access Counselor, as we'll note later, has a lot of authority. But we have to notify them to see whether or not they agree with our determination that this kind of exclusion pertains to the Freedom of Information request. That's called a Section 71C request. That'll be referred to many times in the years to come. Another major change is that there's been a new recognition of our right to, our obligation to fulfill requests that really are commercial in purpose. In other words, if somebody makes a Freedom of Information request, even though it has a commercial purpose, we have an obligation to fulfill it, subject to the legitimate exceptions to the Freedom of Information Act. And it's defined as any part of a public record that would be used for the sale, resale, or solicitation or advertisement for sales and services. The difference between a commercial purpose and a non-commercial purpose is really the amount of time that the public body has to fulfill the request, and I'll tell you about that. Now, the media did get their 2 cents into this aspect as well. because any request made by a media organization will not be deemed to be, the presumption is it won't be deemed to be a for a commercial purpose, and therefore those tougher standards for producing them don't apply to the media. Procedural changes. We used to have 7 working days to fulfill the change. It's now 5. We have 5 business days. That excludes Saturday and Sunday and holidays.
Is there a legal difference between a working day and a business day?
No. For the purpose of this act,
why they changed the wording.
Yeah, that's a good question. Business day, I think, is defined, though, Alderman, as your normal working days,
but the Alderman should deliver.
Exclusive of holidays recognized by your community.
So it's the question of recognized holidays. This is the difference.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Before I forget it, let me also tell you that as far as people making requests, and I'm not sure if it's in the slide presentation at this point or not, but now requests can be made in any form, even an oral form, although the public body doesn't have to accept it in a verbal oral fashion. But any written format, you don't have to make it on a prescribed form. It can be done on a napkin. It can be done on any sheet of paper. So we have provided a format for people to request them, but that's one of the changes in the law. Additionally, if you were to get a request in writing from one of your constituents, that's considered a tender to the city, even though we have what's called FOIA officers, and you've appointed them recently. So you need to pass those things on. If somebody's requesting information to you in a written format, immediately get it. I think really to get it to Mary's office first, to the city administrator or the executive secretary for the administrator and the mayor.
When would the clock start?
The clock starts.
I was out of town and couldn't read my email for 5 days.
Well, you're not a FOIA officer, though. But if they physically gave it to you, okay? If they physically gave it to you, then you have that obligation to turn it off. But otherwise, if we get a request to a FOIA officer or to some other city employee here, the clock starts the day after it's received. So if it's received today, the 5-day period starts tomorrow. Now, there's also an ability to ask for an extension if, under certain circumstances, if the material is difficult to get a hold of, or if there's some extenuating circumstances, or certainly if you're going to challenge it, there's a method for doing all of that.
So if I was out of town for 5 days and on the 5th day I recognized the message was FOA and forwarded it to Ms. McKittrick, the clock would start when she got the message, not when I got it.
Yeah, you're not a FOIA. There's an obligation under the statute to have these FOIA officers, and that's who's supposed to get the receipt of these documents, okay?
And that would be defensible because the message is well dated, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. But we're taking measures within the staff for those FOIA officers to cover the FOIA officers when they're on vacation, et cetera, or when they're ill. So those items are taken. And there's multiple FOIA officers in almost every department, I believe, Mary. Right? Okay. Commercial purposes, the time period is not 5 business days, but it really is 21 working days to provide the record. However, if it's a burdensome request, or if it's a not necessarily a burdensome request, but if it's an extensive request, you can negotiate with the requester to try to get additional time, or work out, or try to narrow the request, find out exactly what kind of information is being requested. And if there is a defense also for the public body if it determines that the request is burdensome or repetitive, way of challenging that.
very quickly. The first 50 pages of materials are free when you produce them. Maximum of 15 cents per page thereafter. Does not include the time that a person has to assemble it or research it. It's a flat 15 cents per page. And the press is exempted unless they're using it for commercial purposes. I'm going to... There are still many exemptions available. Not all of them are gone. There are a set of statutory exemptions, including things like the juvenile court record. There are certain, radon testing results. There's a whole list. I think there's some 26, if I'm not mistaken, 25 or 26 statutory exemptions that are still in place. I've given you, each of you have a copy of the slide presentation, so you can refer to it at your will. Here's a brief summary of those exemptions. The private information we already talked about. The personal information we already discussed. The unwarranted invasion of personal privacy. Law enforcement records still have an exemption. Preliminary drafts or notes, which are opinions that are expressed for policies that aren't yet placed in the public record. In other words, there's still some protection about formulating policy. Business trade secrets, that was exempt under the prior law and it still is. Proposals and bids until a final selection is made. And of course, requests that are considered burdensome, that's a special test or a special a procedure to challenge those. I want to go to the public access counselor because I want you to know about this process. A person who is denied a request has a certain road to follow to challenge that denial. Can either request the public access counselor to review the denial, or can challenge the denial in circuit court in Kane County. If it goes through the public access counselor, the public access counselor then has a certain time period to review that denial and render what's called a binding opinion. And if the binding opinion is against the public body, the public body has a certain time period in which to challenge that access counselor's determination, public access counselor's decision, by an administrative review proceedings, either in the circuit court in Cook County or in Sangamon County, which is Springfield. Likewise, the person requesting it has the same abilities to challenge a decision that would be adverse to the requester. Public access counselor also can give advisory opinions. Either the public body or the requester can, or usually a public body, can ask the Attorney General's office to render an advisory opinion before a finding done. That's sort of trying to get assistance as to these decisions. So there's a lot of new things going on, especially with what they call them PACs, either the non-binding or the advisory decisions. I'm not going to go through the procedures. They're outlined there. I thought I'd leave a couple minutes for any questions that you might have. I think the city staff is well prepared to meet this change in the law, and hopefully we won't get any unusual or burdensome requests, but I think we're prepared to handle it.
Alderman Marks.
Mary, Mary, do you have a preference who we send them to? Should it just be you, or should it be, would you prefer to go to two of the officers?
Internally, we've tried to streamline the process so that our message to the public is that we prefer that they go through my office for tracking purposes primarily. As Attorney Radovich said, we're also asking the public to complete a FOIA request form. However, as long as it's in writing, they don't have to do that. But as you know, we are tracking the requests that do come in. So in order to centralize that, we're asking that they be funneled through my office. If they do not, we will obviously still accept them because we do have FOIA officers in each department. And those representatives, those officers, will also be using the same documentation and spreadsheet to track the requests as well.
So if we get a request, we should just forward it to you only, or do you have another person just in case you're out of the office?
I would say to Jean and, okay, and myself. That would be great if you could just copy Jean on it, send it to me.
Then at least two have it, and we'll meet the time.
Correct. That's correct.
Okay.
I should note, you know, you adopted the ordinance tonight, which modifies our prior ordinance. And, you know, all the exemptions are listed at Section 1-13-5, and these are, for the most part, taken right out of the statute. So, and I tried to incorporate the changes in the procedure so that it's laid out not only for our staff, but certainly for our citizens, so they know exactly what process to make when they're requesting documents.
Alderman Singer?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Charles, what if I neglect to pass the information on to the proper authorities to, shall we say, look into the process, and what and how could I be penalized?
Well, I don't think you're going to be penalized. And I think we have enough information out there, not only in the ordinance, but on the website, indicating who is to receive the FOIA requests.
Okay.
This is pretty clear. There are a set of penalties if the city or the public body is not necessarily negligent, but has willful conduct in denying a Freedom of Information request. The new law does impose, if ultimately there is an adverse decision against the public body, fines are to be issued. It's actually an affirmative language in the statute, $2,500 to $5,000 per violation, and the award of attorney's fees. So there's some real bite in the penalty aspect if there's a willful violation. But there's a number of opportunities to reach compromise or have a decision made by someone other than the public body or the requester before you get to that step.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Alderman Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I recommend that anyone who wants to delve deeper into this read the current issue of the Illinois Municipal League monthly newsletter. There's an article in there by a lawyer who very detailed. And I must admit that I learned something new. As a scientist, I'm familiar with the concept of metadata, but I didn't really understand how metadata applies to city business. And metadata is not specified in the law, and it will be left up to the courts to decide whether or not metadata can be the subject of a FOIA request. And to give you the two examples which came home to me was that when you send an email, the metadata is the data that goes along with your email. Your email is the content of your email. The metadata is your address, the computer you sent it from, the computer you sent it to, the computer you sent all your carbon copies to, the computer that you sent your blind copies to, the date at which you produced the email. All of that is data that's included in the original file. It's data about the data. It's data about your email. It's called metadata. That may be also available to people on a FOIA request. The courts have not yet decided. Another beautiful example is if you're composing a document under a program like Word, and you leave on the trace function, so that as you're making changes and you're going along, you're dealing with an initial draft copy and you're making changes and you get to the final copy, if you have the trace function on in your Word program, all of those traces are included in the file. Your final file, which includes the final copy, also has a record of all you've made changes you made from the original copy. So although you do not know it, the final copy also contains a copy of the original copy as metadata, data about the data. And that may be available. The courts have not yet decided because the Illinois legislature did not address the question of whether this applies to data or to metadata. And the courts are going to decide. So until they do, I presume that one should assume that all the blind carbon copies, etc., that you create are also available to the courts.
Right. I think that article indicated maybe it was a New York court that had made some reference to it. But
there were two different courts, Arizona court and a New York court, that both decided that metadata was available to a requester, that it is part of the city record, even though you think it isn't. A blind carbon copy, I thought, was blind. It isn't, as far as the courts are concerned. Otherwise, that article is very good, and if you wish to delve in deeper, it went much deeper than your presentation, which I think covers the principal points. Thank you, Mr. Radovich.
So, in theory, our legislature has created a put-nothing-in-writing environment in Illinois, which is quite exciting. Quick question for the city attorney. Did the state legislature exempt itself from these new...
Yeah, the public bodies, if you will, defined by the Act...
And does it include phone cell tone?
Does now, it's on the record.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So as you're hitting the microphone with your arm.
Yeah. Public body.
SOS.
Includes all legislative, executive, administrative, and this is not a change, this portion really isn't a change, but it's that all legislative, executive, administrative, or advisory bodies of the state universities and colleges, counties, townships, cities, villages, incorporated towns, school districts, and all other municipal corporations, boards, bureaus, committees, or other commissions of this state, any subsidiary bodies of any of the foregoing, including but not limited to committees and subcommittees thereof, and a school finance authority, etc. So those are the public bodies that are covered by this Act.
So the Illinois General Assembly and those who work for it, elected officials or otherwise, this Act
does not apply.
Appeal or applies to them.
I don't think it excluded them.
Does not include them. They're excluded.
Yeah. The city attorney said that it does.
Well, it's not specifically excluded.
Okay.
Mayor.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any other questions for the city attorney? Thank you, Chuck, very much.
Okay.
A new business, ladies and gentlemen. Any new business by any member of the city council? Ellen, anything new?
Snow sculpting.
Snow sculpting kicks off tomorrow.
Hey.
Oh, the carving already?
Yeah.
The 20th or 23rd, though, is when they have the big displays.
They did start one today, though.
Oh, wow. Wow. Cool.
Starting on Saturday.
Excellent. Anyone else? I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
Motion by Piper, seconded by Mr. Marks. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you, everyone.